Welcome to The Better Picture. I'm Ross Foote, and we're here at Red River Radio to answer your questions about photography and anything that related to that. This is where we stay close, we get close, stay focused, and keep shooting. Today, my guest is Freeport's own Molly Walton Corbett, singer, artist, professional photographer, and now I'm proud to say a new friend. But before I get to Molly, let me tell you about our new format. Since the last show, we've put a little structure in place. We're still a call-in show, and while I have access to Molly to help answer with questions, we welcome anything that you have that you're wondering about on how to take pictures, why we take them, what we can and should do with them. We're going to have a conversation, but we'll put our conversation on hold to answer your calls. 1-800-552-8502. That's 1-800-552-8502, and we have the staff of Red River Radio pitched in waiting for your call to get it to us. We also plan to introduce three short segments in this show. One is a smartphones tip, which we'll do about a quarter past the hour, Molly's Minute on Instagram tips at about the half-hour point, and then a techno tip segment at the quarter till called Shooting in the Raw. So call in at any time. And the wonderful Red River Radio staff is here to line up your calls and maintain order. Now, Molly, welcome to The Better Picture.
Thank you so much for having me, Ross. It's great to be here.
Well, it's tickled for me to have you here. You're the owner and photographer of Molly Corbett Photography, a studio here in Shreveport. And before we get into what you do, let's talk a little bit about how you got here. What brought you to photography in the first place?
I have been a photographer, well, I've been shooting cameras since I was, I think before I was 10 years old. My dad had an old Minolta that he bought in Vietnam when he was in the Navy, and I found it around my 10th year, I think, and I asked Dad, hey, can I get some black and white film and put in the camera and just see what happens? And he had the grace to say yes. Even though I'm sure that was a very expensive tool for me to be playing with. And I have been shooting ever since, Ross. But I was one of those weird kids. I loved Life magazine, even though all of the content may not have been appropriate for my young age. But my parents let me look through those magazines, and I fell in love with the visual image because of that.
Well, you know, one of the things we recommend to people is look at the Life magazines, old and new. Look at any magazine, because... Yeah. They're full of professional photographs.
Absolutely.
And there's a reason that that will catch you and bring you in. Now, you started with film.
Yes.
But you shifted to digital.
I did.
And when was that?
Around 2001.
So you really have developed your skills with the digital set.
Most definitely.
And when did the passion turn to the profession?
You know, when I first moved here in 2007, I had a five-month-old baby, and, I hadn't been married but about 3 years. And I was a stay-at-home mom, and I loved taking pictures, of course, of my baby and people and things around me. And then I started to get questions from people, hey, would you come take pictures of my kids, because they saw the pictures that I'd taken of my own son. So girlfriends in and around the neighborhood would ask me to take photos of their kids. And then I had one friend who was just so encouraging, Sandra. And Sandra said, you know what, you need to start your own business. And it was the first time it had even occurred to me, Ross. And I was just so very fortunate to have a friend who encouraged me so much. And I let that idea take root. She planted a seed, and I let it take root, and I started to imagine what that would be like. And then I just started taking pictures for friends and charging them. And then, you know, you say, well, I'm making money here. I better get right with the IRS.
Right.
So you get all your ducks in a row, and you get your LLC and all your paperwork. And then next thing you know, you know, you've got a little business. And then I've wanted to be with people that could help me network and get my word out, because I didn't know anyone from here except my husband.
And, you know, that's a very good point for people to learn on, even if they're not going to come professional. Taking pictures of things that you know, mm-hmm. your own children,
mm-hmm.
and not just the snapshots, actually working to get those really nice pictures,
mm-hmm.
builds a skill set that you can move on to others.
Absolutely.
I mean, you do portrait work.
I do.
And you do portrait work of strangers.
I do.
But by the time you take the pictures, are you still strangers?
No, not in the slightest. And that's one of the joys of my work, is growing relationships with these people. And you and I have talked before about how important rapport is to the photographic process. It really is the key element that doesn't get a whole lot of talk about it. But it's so important that your model be comfortable, that your subject be comfortable with you, or the client, as it were. They've got to feel comfortable in your presence, because you're not going to get a natural smile out of them if they're not.
That's right. One of the things that we watch in the portrait world is how you put people at ease.
Mm-hmm.
And are you one that shoots while you're talking to them? Do you talk to them first? What's the process if you have somebody that's invited to come and take pictures?
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give them to start in with the stranger?
Well, my process is always to start with a face-to-face conversation with the person who wants the photography services. I like to meet them in person and get a sense for them. And I do that either at my office, or I'll go over to Rhino Coffee and just, you know, in a place where everybody likes to be, and just relax and get to know each other. And then I like to do what I call a dream sheet. And I stole that from the military, but I can do that because I'm a military wife. And the dream sheet is basically a smattering of photos that I find from all over the internet in the vein of what I think they're looking for as clients. And so they're already looking at an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper of all of these photos that are expressing what they've told me they'd like to have, because I need to know why they want these photos. That helps me build the dream sheet. And then, Ross, by the time we've met each other and had a coffee and get in front of that camera together, they feel like they know me, and they feel like they know where we're going with the poses. They've already practiced what they've seen on that paper. They know how to get in position. So it's all not new.
You made them do the homework.
Absolutely.
Kermit is here to help us. He tells me we have a text question coming in.
Sure. This is a question from Tim from Nacogdoches, Texas. He asks if there is a digital camera where you can manually turn off the flash.
Well, Tim, that is a great question. There is a digital camera that will do anything and everything you want. The question is finding it. Most of the consumer-level digital cameras are trying to make decisions for you.
Mm.
And when you go to take the picture, if it's low light, it's going to automatically turn the flash on. Almost every one of them that I've seen, you can turn that off. Mm-hmm. The problem, Tim, comes with finding how to do it. And that's going to lead me to my first piece of advice I will give everybody. When you buy a camera, read the manual and practice with the manual and play with the manual and learn where those controls are. Especially if you're going to be in a situation where you're taking a picture and you don't want the flash, because there's a no flash photography in the museum, they'll let you take the pictures, those type situations. The iPhones, the rest, have a button that's pretty intuitive. But some of the lesser complicated cameras really get more complicated, because they've buried those switches. As you move up the line, it assumes that you're going to be in control and ask for it. As far as brands go, I can't tell you, but my bet would be you get past $200 on a camera and you got to turn the flash on. Molly,
I would definitely concur.
I might just add, Russ, just from my own personal experience and looking at my smartphone, look for the lightning bolt.
Right.
The lightning bolt, and then there's usually an anti-lightning bolt with a slash through it. That's usually the one that touches the that turns the flash off.
I like that, anti-lightning bolt.
There is a universal thing, and Tim, that may be a good tip from Kermit to look in your manual and look for that lightning bolt and to tell you where to do it. A lot of the cameras have gotten so simple where there are no real knobs on them. You have a button you push. Look to the menus, and if you hit info, or most of the buttons have a thing that says menu, then it's just a hunting game to figure out where to turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. While waiting on our next question, that brings us up to question I have for Molly. With photography moving as fast as it is in this digital world, do you make time to study what can happen, or do you just go out and try to learn what a camera will do when you need to make it do that?
You know, Ross, I like to be a little bit more prepared when I approach a shoot, especially if it's one that's complicated. So I do make time to study. And because I'm not formally or classically trained in photography, everything I get is from the internet, and it is free, 90 free. So I like to take long, when I take long trips with my family, I let my husband drive. And while he's driving, I'm reading. And I love, I've got a little hotspot on my phone. I love to surf the internet. Some of my favorites, my go-tos are scottkelby.com and kenrockwell.com. Neither of whom have paid me, but I will accept all checks, gentlemen. Assuming they're listening. But I love to go and visit their sites because they're very conversational in their approach. And they'll show you how to do different things either technically with your camera or composition-wise or environment-wise, wherever you're shooting, that will just give you an overall better shooting experience and a better finished product photograph.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Ken Rockwell. He's one that I recommend people as well because... Mm-hmm. He does put it down in layman's terms, mm-hmm. and he gets down to the... Well, before I recommended him, I actually wrote to him.
Did you?
And said, I'm starting the show. Can I use the thing back? And he said the exact same thing as you. Just send me the check. Which, of course, we didn't. It's free to go to his site.
Yes.
Many of the photography sites make their money off of referrals to... B&H Photo and Adorama and some of the other people
with
the links that's on it.
Yeah.
But we will, but it doesn't cost you anything to do that.
No, but you know what, Ross? I actually purchased my D700 through his website because he had a link for the D700 to Amazon, which is where I purchased my camera. But I specifically did it through his site because I knew it would benefit him. And I wanted that purchase to benefit him because he's the one who helped me make that decision.
Right. It's a great source of information. Kermit tells me we have another text.
Excellent.
We do indeed. And this question is for Molly.
Yay.
Do you still shoot with film cameras, or are you now shooting exclusively with digital?
I shoot exclusively with digital. It's a great question. And the reason why is because of money. It is so expensive to buy film. I remember carrying around, well, money and space. I would carry around 20, 30 rolls of film. If I was out of film and visiting with friends or family, I'd say, hey, you got any film? And I'd use every roll they had. And that's just rude. So digital is definitely the way to go for me. That and the fact that, you know, I, as a business professional with photography, I don't have a lot of time for the artistry side of that. And film, it's just, you know, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, and I'm a business owner. Film requires so much time. I have never, and you know, I'm going to lose points with the purists out there, but I have never developed my own film. I've only been in a dark room one time, and I can't say for sure that was for photography. And
well, you know, I had a different move to the digital. My wife pushed me to get a digital camera. I finally got a good digital camera, thinking I would shoot film and digital,
right?
Because I did work in the dark room and I was mm-hmm. old school, and was not going to give it up.
Right.
And since that time, I've shot probably 150,000 digital, and I've shot two rolls of film.
Bless your heart.
Because I could shoot the film and give the roll to somebody else to develop.
Yeah.
Mine's not so much a money situation is. I like the technique of being able to see what it is that I'm doing. If you have any questions, you can call in at 800-552-8502. Molly and I are sitting here talking about cameras, and welcome to any question you have or any interest that you may have with that. The digital is the realm to go. We are not spending a lot of time on film. I'll entertain pictures of questions on film, but... we've gotten to a point now where you can actually take photographs and use computer programs that will simulate the film. So
yeah.
If you liked the nice fat colors of Kodachrome or the grain of Tri-X, you can process it through that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're up at a point now where we're waiting on our next call. We're going to go to our first segment, which I'm calling smartphone smart shooting. More and more of us are using our smartphones for more and more situations. And as a result, the manufacturers are designing phones that try to do everything for us. Kind of like Tim's question, they just assume they know when we want to flash when we really may not want that. It's a one-size-fits-all mentality, but in my mind, one size fits none. Two of the biggest issues in any photograph you take are focus and exposure. And on a phone, many people know they can just touch an area on the screen and the camera will focus there. But if you take your finger away and move, the camera may change its mind and try to focus somewhere different. And if you leave your finger in the middle of it, then it's kind of hard to push the button and compose the photograph. On the iPhone, if you pick out the key part of your photograph, touch and hold that point for just a few seconds, the little yellow square that shows where you're focusing on will blink and the words AE/AF lock will appear on the screen. And at that point, you've got it. That means both the focus and the exposure are locked on the subject matter that you chose, not the camera. And then you can compose your image without your finger in the middle of the view, get it set like you want to, and when you take the picture, what you selected will be properly done. I understand that the new iPhone 6 even has a manual adjustment where you can increase or decrease the exposure. So in a smartphone, smart shooting situation, experiment with locking down your settings. Take control of your phone to get that better picture. Now, Molly, you do a lot of phone photography.
I do.
In fact, later when we get to the Instagram minute, which is something I will confess I know little about, that's phone-driven with that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found any special techniques?
Well, it's important to be able to shoot that phone with one hand in most cases, especially the selfie case. I think people ask all the time, what's the best camera? The best camera is the one you've got in your hand. And let's face it, we all have that phone in our hand. So, you know, whether I'm capturing something that silly that my son has done, or, you know, I'm actually at a professional event shooting professionally, and I have a large group of people that want me to capture that same picture with their phone instead of just with my camera. That happens quite a bit. I'm happy to do that. It's important to, as with any camera, you've got to have a steady hand. Any shake and you're going to get that blurry, it's not good photo. You also want to, you don't want to shoot into a light source, especially with the phone cameras. They tend to really overcompensate for that. And I've asked my subject to turn so that the light is going across them instead of coming from behind them. It's an easy move for me to make and an easy move for them to make, and it makes all the difference in the photo.
If I were a betting person, I would bet that when you take somebody else's phone to take their picture, you also take over and rearrange the picture.
A little bit.
Yeah.
It's hard not to. You know, I'm just trained. My eyes trained to see differently. And I think I see the world in LCD sometimes through that little square on the back. But, you know, if I'm going to do it, I want to give them the best photo that I can, even in a casual scenario.
Well, you talk about your eyes being trained. You are not simply a graphic worker and an artist in that standpoint. I'm not sure our listening audience knows that you're also a very accomplished singer, having done the national anthem for a Rangers game and several other things. I mean, that takes you a level above most of us singing in the shower. One of the questions that comes in developing the artistic photo is what that source is. Do you see any interplay between music and relations of tones to shapes and colors and images?
Absolutely. The draw to, it's such a great question. The draw to anything creative for me is about storytelling. I love story, and, you know, from a faith perspective, you know, redemptive stories are my favorite. And I'm wired for that. I've always looked for story, and I don't know a better way to tell stories than to sing them or take pictures of them. And you can communicate so much through the power of a song or through the power of a photograph without really giving the background. And that's something that I love so much about both of these genres and working in them, is you're not communicating in a concrete way, but it's more impactful communication, I think, because it reaches past and transcends to the soul. And it's just a really beautiful way of getting a point across or getting a message across. And I'm just as passionate about singing as I am about photography. It's just that photography allows me to, you know, buy the bread and butter and pay the bills. And for that, I'm eternally grateful, because I'm doing something that I absolutely love and making a living and feeding my family with it.
Well, that is great. And in feeding your family and setting up this this studio, you have graciously sent us a series of pictures. If you look to our webpage, thebetterpicture.org, you can go directly there, or you can get to it with a link off of redriverradio.org. There are a series of sample pictures that I didn't see on your webpage. I appreciate you sharing those with us. Those of you who do not have access to it right now, you can always go back and find them later. I found it very intriguing. One of the first pictures we have on the page is a model, Veronique, who is, it's done with a almost totally black background. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have her face up close, and she drifts back into a soft-focused black background. And if you scroll down a few more, there's a wonderful picture of a box of popcorn that is all in focus and all perfectly lit, and they seem to have the same kind of pull to me, the pull of doing. When you set those pictures up, what do you do for the background? What part does the background play?
Well, in the picture of Veronique, I wanted the natural environment to do most of the work for me in terms of light. So I had her on a black backdrop in a very dark room where I had blocked out all light as much as possible. And then I used a one single studio strobe with a diffuser on it, a diffuser umbrella, and shot through that diffuser to her. And so you get this beautiful soft light on her. And then, I mean, I stopped it. I tried to look up the measurements on this one and I couldn't find them. But I mean, I am letting in almost no light in that. And there's very little post-production work done on that photo. But of course, the focal point for me is her eye, which I love to do that. And I'm, you know, showing the curve of her body. But I really want the light to kind of hide and obscure those curves. I don't want to give it all away. And that's interesting that we were just talking about music. It's very much the same in photography. I don't want to give it all away up front. I want to tease the viewer just like I like to tease the listener. I don't pull out my best runs or do my best vocal techniques in the beginning of the song. That's a waste. You want to woo them in a little bit. And it's the same thing with a photo like this. You woo them in at the eye. And then little by little, as the eye moves, you reveal a little bit more in the photograph. It's the same basic concept. We want to tease the viewer and tease the listener.
Well, that's great. Kermit's telling me we have a phone call coming in.
Great.
We do indeed. First call for the evening, Leslie from Bossier City.
Yay.
Hey. My question is kind of simple but kind of complex at the same time. How do you, when you go from an amateur to a professional, get your friends to pay you for your work?
That's a great question.
Well,
Leslie.
I haven't ever been able to figure out how to do that. I went backwards. I worked as a professional before I went to law school, and since that time, I've gone the other way around. So I'm going to flip that over to Molly, because I think that's pointed at her, Leslie.
Yes, absolutely. And it's such a great question, Leslie. And thanks so much for calling in and asking. I tell you, I had mentioned earlier, I had one really encouraging friend who basically told me, you know, don't use a cutesy name. You need a good name. It just needs to be your name for your business. And she was the first one who actually paid me for work. Now, among my friends at the time, she was the only one who paid me for my work. So what I have to say to you is, you've got to get outside your circle of friends. God love them. You know, the prophet is never appreciated in his hometown. Neither is the photographer. You're going to have to get out there with strangers, have examples of your work to show them that you have what it takes to give them the photograph that they need and sell it. If you do have one client or one friend who has become a client, ask them to do a testimonial. Ask them to post your work for them on their Facebook page or on their Instagram and get them to tell the good news. That's what my friend did for me, and it really made all the difference. But we've got to get past that initial circle network. We've got to get out into those other layers.
And one of the things you can do is by setting up to show those pictures, just attach the price of your camera to the bottom of it and show them exactly what it is. There's a reason that a $2,000 lens takes a better picture than another one. Yeah. We've got another call. Thank you, Leslie. We've got another call coming in.
We do. This is Michael from Shreveport. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, Ross and Molly.
Hey, Michael.
Hey.
So, you know, I've always wanted to know that when someone takes my picture, the camera doesn't steal my soul, right?
You've been to Morocco in the last 30 years, I can tell.
My camera does.
That's not my question.
My camera does steal your soul.
I would love to hear y'all talk a little bit about the absolute beauty of black and white compared to color, because the black and white world is so wonderfully, vividly colorful.
Michael, that is a fantastic entree into one of my views. All photographs are poor representations of what we see in person. Poor in the sense of it can't be 100% accurate. So we're already making some compromise and we're putting our artistic eye on it and we're already bending it some way. And in the realist, much like the Dutch painters and the others that tried to get exactly right, they could get close, but it was still their interpretation.
Right.
With black and white, you have given that up. You've already said, this is not pure representation. This is going to be what I'm trying to do to convey a message, to not take your soul, but to capture it. And if you, we mentioned last time when Neil was here, the definition of photography is writing with light, photons. And if you get down to black and white, you have limited yourself to a very narrow palette, even though there are a million grays you can play with, but you've limited yourself to where your artistic interpretation is probably of more significance than the actual representation. You've already suspended the disbelief. This is not what you see in real life. This is what I want to convey. Molly, you shoot both.
I agree, absolutely. And I would just add to that that there's something about, because we see in color, it's known to us, and sometimes it can be garish in a photograph, but black and white seems to create an epistemic distance when we look at the photo. So it's almost like that black and white look cues us into a story, or a background that we need to be clued into. It's I think about those photos of the migrant workers, those famous photos of the migrant workers, and how ominous they are. And it's almost like the black and whiteness. If they were in color, it would lose the drama of the moment. And it black and white to me just says drama. And I've already told you how much I love a story. So I think that distance is needed sometimes.
And Michael, if you go back and look at Ansel Adams, probably one of the better black and white landscape photographers ever, he worked with 10 different tonal ranges, and there are great books and articles written on how he would shift that to evoke different moods, much like you would change keys in music to evoke a different feeling. And I got to tell you, I looked at him and I studied him, and I didn't really appreciate him until I went to Yosemite. And to see Half Dome and see El Capitan and see those ferns in real life and all the rest made the black and white images so much richer to me, because you appreciate the artist effort instead of documentary recordation. So great question. Probably ought to start a whole nother radio program on the better black and white photo, because obviously Molly and I could go on that for a long time.
Definitely.
Still got your soul with you?
Now I do. You helped me coax it back.
Thank you. We restored it.
Well, that's
excellent.
Good. That's what we're trying to do.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye, Michael.
Well, that is brings us to our half-hour point, which is where I'm going to turn the microphone over to Molly on Instagram. The reason I'm doing this is I don't understand anything about it, and my ulterior motive inviting her in was so I could start learning about how to do this as we go. So, Molly, let's do Molly's Minute on Instagram.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Ross. One of the things that I love about Instagram, you know, I'm a social girl, and I'm all over Facebook. And I didn't come to Instagram right away because I felt like, you know, I might be a little too old for Instagram because a lot of my younger friends and associates are on it. But Instagram is so hot right now. And the cool thing I learned when I finally did break that barrier and get on Instagram, I downloaded the app to my phone and I created a username. And my username, I'm happy to share, is MCP Badass, and that's MCP for Molly Corbett Photography, and Badass because I'm irreverent. And so you can go find me on Instagram. But my favorite thing about Instagram is the ability to edit the photos. These editing tools are so aggressive, Ross. It's stuff that you and I are used to, even with raw elements on, you know, editing in Camera Raw software. So maybe not that good, but pretty close. So you can upload a photo or take a photo in the app. And once you've created your user ID, you have the ability to do this. And then once that photo has been taken, there's a little button you can push. It looks like a sun that's half dark and half light. And you can push that button and it'll do like an auto edit for you. And that's okay. I usually do that first, but you know me, that's not enough. I got to do more. So then I go over to this other button that looks like a wrench in a circle and I push that puppy and oh man, I can control brightness. I can control contrast. I can even control warmth. If I want to make the photo warmer, I can do that. If I want to get some blue in it and take some of that amber out, I can do that too. I can even increase or decrease the saturation. Sometimes when the photo has those really bright hot spots, I call them, where the light is really too bright, there's a highlights function where I can actually bring those up or down. I can even bring shadows up. And that's my favorite because I have black kitty cats at home. And I don't know if you've ever tried to photograph a black cat, but that is something to do. And the shadows function for me is always useful. I can bump that up a notch or two, and then suddenly they have contour, and I can see their fur, individual hairs in their fur, and they're no longer just black solid objects with eyes.
And all of these pictures are taken on a phone.
Yes, or you can do these editings, or these edits, I should say, with photos that are already in your camera roll.
Okay, so you can import the pictures over.
You absolutely can. And I would highly recommend it because I'm kind of picky when it comes to photos, and I rarely like the first one I shoot. So I like to start out in the camera mode of the phone because, you know, you know this better than I do. You can go into the camera mode, and I can hold that photo down and take 25 pictures of you before 10 seconds is over. Now, because I'm picky, I'm going to go back through and look at those photos and find the one where you're not blinking that I like the best, and then I'm going to take that photo into Instagram, and I can find it right there from the camera roll.
Well, the fact that you can do all these manipulations are great if you can get to them.
Yes.
I'm a little bit older, and we won't get into the irreverence, but my particular name, my handle is Ross Foot Photos. And I've just set it up, and I did it in connection with the Better Picture to start showing some of the good and the bad pictures.
Yes.
I am purposely putting bad pictures on mine with an improvement to show you, with a little description, how does a person find my last instruction on the same thing I just gave the tip on, how to hold it down?
Well, you've already done it for them, Ross. You gave them your handle on Instagram, Ross Foot Photos. So I can go to Instagram, hit the from the homepage, as soon as the app loads, I hit that little magnifying glass, and I hit people, and I just start typing Ross, R-O-S-S, F-O-O-T-E photos, and there you are, and look, I'm following you.
Now you're speaking the language of the younger still. When you say just go to that app, mm-hmm. This is a free app that you download
yes.
from the App Store, or whatever phone type you use.
Yes, that's exactly right. Twitter does, not Twitter, I'm sorry, Instagram does have a presence on desktops, but it's extremely limited because Instagram is made for cell phones. So you definitely want to just go and grab that app from the App Store on your iPhone. And once you've downloaded it and it is free, then you can start to, well, first they're going to ask you to create a username, of course, and you can, you know, create your own
handle. Can a person go look at mine without having their own username?
That's a good question, and I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that. I would think not, because you've got to set it up when you download the app.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, in the future, those of you who are using Instagram, and apparently most people are.
Yeah, many of us. Yeah.
If you go to Ross Foot Photos, my effort's going to be to post some tips and to share with some of the things that you can to improve it. The whole purpose of this show is to take the snapshot and make it a photograph, is to move you forward. We're not really cultivating or trying to educate the professionals. They know more than me and probably as much as Molly. So if you have a question, you can call 800-552-8502. While we have the Irreverent Molly here with her knowledge about the rest of it, I urge you to call in with any of the questions you have on that. Let's get back for just a second to help the people. We've got, you know, T-ball and baseball and things that are coming on now. Do you shoot kids' sports? Is that one of your...
I used to, Ross, but I don't do that anymore.
Too hot?
There are a variety of reasons. But no, I mean, as my child was in T-ball last year, and I was there faithfully with my camera. I want to capture it just as much as any other parent does.
And you have any tips for people on what to do to make it different or to, other than to get as close as you can?
Well, definitely get as close as you can. But with sports, I say a long lens and a tripod.
That's a great tip.
Yeah.
One of the things that most of you will know is you can take your phone and you can exaggerate. You can do the little reverse pinch move and zoom in to get better images. Don't confuse that with a real zoom lens.
Right.
Because all you're really doing is limiting what part of the image is going on to the being recorded off the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion, if you can't get any closer, is take the whole picture and do the editing later.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to zoom in to see. If you have a camera that will take adjustable lenses, then you can get one. If there's a real big a big event coming up, an all-star game or something else, there are even places you can rent the big telephoto zooms. Now, if you look at the photographers at the Saints game, they're carrying $14,000 to $15,000 lenses on top of $5,000 and $6,000 bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll usually have two of those. So that guy sitting down there in front of the linebacker is sporting about $35,000 or $40,000 worth of equipment.
Yeah.
But you're not trying to get published in Sports Illustrated. You're trying to catch Johnny or Jill kicking a goal or running down the field or picking clover.
Yeah.
They're like some of the children that I've seen. So you can rent the bigger lens for the one event and not have to do it.
That's a great tip, Ross. I've rented myself.
We got another call coming in.
We do. This is Billy from Kilgore. Billy, go ahead.
Yes, I have a question for, I guess, Molly, but also Ross. I'm given more toward the black and white photography. I guess I'm a little bit old school, but at the same time, I don't run into a photographic network, over here in East Texas where I am anyway.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to, so I guess I'm going to have to break down. I'm not worried about the camera stealing my soul. It's about Facebook stealing my soul. I guess I'm going to have to join. I never have.
Billy, what kind of camera do you shoot?
Well, I've got a couple of cameras. I've got a Nikon, I think it's a D3, I can't remember. It's about a 10-year-old digital, and I've also got a Leica M3 with a number of lenses.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Kodak 129. You know, I use a variety of things. I occasionally talk to friends of mine in other towns who are doing things like pinhole photography or 4x5.
And right. Yeah, yeah.
But what I'm wanting to know is how adaptable is the Instagram to transferring or editing black and white? Say, perhaps if I took it off my computer, my desktop, and loaded it on my digital, or some way I could upload it is what I'm wondering. You know, I suspect I can figure out Facebook. Or, you have to be on Facebook to be on Instagram, correct?
No, that is not correct, Billy. You do not have to enter that deep, dark world of Facebook. You can strictly stick with Instagram. But what's so great about Instagram, and, you know, I do this all the time. I'll email a file that I've taken, a photo that I've taken to myself. And if you have a smartphone with email on it, you can download or save that photo right from that email that you open on your phone, and it will save it to your camera roll. And then you can upload it to Instagram, and you can upload it exactly as it is and do no filters, no editing, no modification whatsoever, and it'll be perfect as is. But the saturation function in the editing side of Instagram will also enable you to take all of the color out.
I see. Okay. Will the Instagram in some of the editing? And I know I can learn a lot more by just going through and studying the Instagram.
Mm-hmm. That's how I learned it.
Will it decrease in the intensity of, say, some of the focusing and things of that nature every time you edit it?
No. And the beauty of Instagram, which I did not bring up earlier, and I'm so glad you brought it up because I think it's Ross's favorite thing about Instagram, is that when you edit an Instagram photo, it creates a new photo file so that you do not do anything to the original. That stands in your photo album on your camera or on your phone, and then it creates a new file. Now, what that does is it crowds up your phone. So you're going to have to do some deleting at some point down the line. But I think Instagram and you are going to get along great, Billy.
Well, I'll check it. The only other question, I'll hang up after I ask the question because I don't want to ask too many more. There are a lot of other people out here. I'm wondering about editing in. I have scanned a number of older photographs, say from the 1950s, 60s, things of my early parts of my life.
Yes.
And so I would like to be able to work with them, not so much to edit them, but basically to share particular portions, because I do commit. I create things such as triplets with little stories.
That is a great thing to do.
I
recommend to everybody that if you have some of those old photographs, go ahead and get them scanned now. Get a high-resolution scan, and then the digital world treats it exactly like you're taking it on your D3. So you can do the manipulation, you can do the recording, you can do the cropping, you can do whatever you want to do.
You know what, Ross? I'm going to go ahead and say it. Take a photo of the photo. Then you get this high-resolution version, even higher. I mean, I've done that with some photos from the 30s and 40s of my grandmother's personal collection, and it turned out great. They used it in a slide presentation for her 66th wedding anniversary this past weekend.
And so, Billy, what you can do is take the photograph of the photograph. Make sure you don't have any glary lights on it.
Yes.
Set it up where it's in a neutral place but well lit. Sure. And then you can crop out the frame, and you can crop out. I would take it out from behind glass.
Definitely.
Glass will mess it up and clean it, because once you get a real steady shot, dust spots and the rest will show up. And you can even take some of the old ones that are faded, put them back in on the digital side, and enhance them.
Yeah.
Kermit tells me we have really appreciate the call.
Thank you so much.
Three good questions. We got a text question coming in.
We do indeed. This one is a technical question. Wondering, on digital cameras like the Nikon L840, can you use a 2x multiplier on the lens like you could with old film SLRs?
Yes. If you have the multiplier, if you have the adapter that matches that particular lens. There are several. Vivitar makes one. There are several that make them. One of the problems with adding a third-party multiplier, a third-party enhancer, is they don't always communicate real well from the lens to the camera. These things have gotten so damn smart that the lens and the camera body talk to each other. Focal distances, f-stop, shutter speeds, they know each other, what's going on. Once you put in the doubler on it, and they have one that's 1.5 times and less, then you can still get that information if you have the, in the case of the Nikon, if you have the Nikon enhancements. Now, one of the things you have to remember is when you double that focal length, you are cutting your light down. And so if you have a lens that's very bright, a 2.8 telephoto, and you put a doubler on it, it's going to go to a 4 or a 5, 6. I'm not sure. But so it'll be a little darker. You have to shoot a little bit slower. And the slower you shoot with the telephoto lens, the more chance you have for vibration. So there are some trade-offs in that, but it is possible. And if you have interchangeable lenses, then the doubler should fit just like it was on a film situation. That actually leads me to the next part that we have, our techno tip, and this is geared a little more for the camera geek than a lot of the others, because it involves what I call shooting in the raw. Digital photographs come in two basic formats. You have the JPEG, which is the default setting on most cameras, and then a RAW format. And this just refers to how your camera records the digital information on your storage card. A photograph is just a light changing a sensor. On film, it's chemical. On a digital camera, it's an electrical change. And with JPEG, the purpose is to reduce the size of the file so you can put more onto your card. The way it does that is, based on the settings of your camera, it throws away some of the data, and it substitutes a formula for it. And every time you open it and close it back and forth, it has to make those computations again. Kind of like Billy's question, does it change things? Hmm. Opening and reopening a JPEG will make some slight changes. It's not going to affect too much the snapshot, but ultimately it will degrade the picture. Shooting in RAW saves all of the data. Once you take a JPEG picture, the camera processes the image, much like you develop film. If you shoot in RAW, it doesn't develop the film. It doesn't develop the image till you get to your computer, and then you get to choose which way you want it developed. And you can choose different ways because you never lose that RAW data. For example, if you took a JPEG photo inside a church and you had the settings just off, the wedding dress may come off off-white, or the face may have an orange or green tint depending on whether you had different kind of lighting. And the camera has then made it irreversible. The information that's lost is lost. If you had shot that in RAW, you could later get to the computer and say, oh, wait, develop that like it's an inside film. Mm. And it comes out with a white dress and normal skin tones. RAW is much more flexible, much easier to use in the editing process, but it is probably more intimidating than it is difficult. People hesitate to go because it sounds pretty techno and complicated. If you've been wanted to try and dabbling in the RAW image, check, because most cameras now will allow you to record both RAW and JPEG of the same image. So you can get the RAW without worried about missing that shot that you had in JPEG. So even if you keep all your clothes on, try shooting in the RAW for a better picture. That's our techno minute for the day that we have there. Other questions? We don't. Okay, well, let's move on then with questions for Molly. And that would be one piece of advice you would give the person that has an eye but doesn't have the... a decent camera, but doesn't know how to move forward. Mm. Where do you go?
A decent eye, but doesn't know how to move forward. I'll tell you what, somebody with a decent eye is more than likely seen a photograph or two in their lives that they love and they can look back to. And that's one of the most impactful things that I was able to do for myself in learning the process of photography, is to go and look at those photographers that I appreciated and admired and try to go and do likewise. You know, the sincerest form of flattery is imitation. And it's also a great way to learn how to be a better photographer. So people like Annie Leibovitz, Linda McCartney, who just, you know, never, ever gets a good rap for her photography because of who she was or who she was married to. But she had to work a lot harder as a photographer, but she shot some beautiful work. I love to go back and look at those photos. I still go back to Life magazines. I still buy them in flea markets when I find them. Some of the most engaging photographs that have ever touched me to the core were out of those magazines. I look at them. I try to think about how I could restructure them and do those shots myself. What lighting would I need to use? And then that takes me to the research process, Ross. And I am still an avid photography researcher to this day. You can't do enough research. And anytime I want to try something new, it's back to the internet.
The last show that we did, Neil Johnson was our guest, and he made an interesting comment that some photographs you make and some photographs you take.
Mm-hmm.
And the person with the eye then has to decide, are they setting up to make a photograph, or are you taking the opportunity what's presented? Molly, in your shooting, do you approach differently when you're taking as opposed to making a photograph?
I do. Making a photograph is all about the pre-flight, as we used to say as flight attendants. You know, you've got the setup, you got to be ready and bring to the shoot what's necessary to accomplish it. You know, a recent shoot that I did at Libby Glass, you know, there was quite a bit of research that went into getting those shots for the marketing team before I ever arrived on the set. But then there's the photographs that you just capture, the taking photographs. And those are about being present in the moment. You've got to be submerged in that environment, especially when it comes to kids and animals. You've got to watch them, because you're going to miss something if you don't. And you don't watch like this with your camera down at your waist. You watch with your camera. You watch through the camera.
Right.
You know, I'm not a shooter with the live view. I don't really care for live view. I want to put my eye to that camera to see through that lens. And that's the way I approach. If you see me at live music venues shooting, if you see me, for instance, Five Finger Death Punch recently, I got kicked in the chin because I was watching through my lens, but it was worth it. But if you see me shooting something like that at the municipal, or if you see me shooting children or a sporting event, you're not going to see my face. You're going to see my camera at my face, because I don't want to miss the shot. And taking a good photograph is about being present in the moment and not missing it.
And sometimes I've found that it actually changes. Recently, I went to a good friend's house here in Shreveport that has a magnificent garden, and I brought all my lenses to take the wide-angle pictures of all of it. Mm. And as Neil had said, you know, when the muse jumps on your back, you kind of go where they tell you.
I love that.
I ended up pulling out a 35, 40-year-old lens that was a close-up lens and did nothing but close-up pictures of these magnificent daylilies and flowers he had around it. And interesting story, interesting to me, I sent the pictures to him just to say, this is a different view of what your garden looks like, because most people don't get down four inches from a flower and look at it.
Right.
And his wife sent it on to her father, who is over 90, who sent it to a good friend of his in Alexandria, who is over 90, who sent it to my mother, who was over 90, all of this by email. And 3 days later, when I went to visit my mother in Alexandria, she said, I loved your pictures of the flowers.
Oh,
now, how 270 years of combined age had used the internet and captured it, I dubbed them the millennial 90s, because they got it around. But that just goes to show where you can be sharing. And it also gives me a chance to give a shout out to my mother, which not everybody gets a chance to do on their own radio show. So, hey, mother. But it is a good thing. It brings up one of our last topics on how many ways you can share the photographs. You can print them. You can do the Instagram. You can do the books. And one of the combined efforts that technology has done that I thought is so great is you can send postcards from your phone, and you can send them from anywhere in the world, and you can send them for about $1 a piece.
Yeah.
I use a program called Touch Notes, but there's several out there. Get on the internet. So if you're in Italy and you take a picture that you want to send to your 90-year-old mother who's patiently waiting at home for you to get back on the radio, you can send the email But sometimes it's just nice to get a postcard.
Oh, I agree.
And what you do from Italy is you upload the picture, you type your message, you put the address on it, or anywhere in the world that has Wi-Fi, and the total cost of production, mailing, and the rest is about $1.
That's unreal. So, I had no idea.
Another great use is thank you notes. If you go to somebody's house, you take a picture of their dog or their child or something, and send them a thank you note. Old-fashioned, written thank you note, but it's a picture of something that's dear to them.
Yeah.
So there are just a million ways to share photographs, and you can do it at any age. If the three 90-year-olds can swap things around and laugh about it, then any of us can do that.
So that's the truth.
It really has worked out quite well. Well, Molly, are there any art projects you're working on right now?
I am working on a big project.
Let me interrupt you a second, because I have been derelict in doing this. If people want to see more of your work, I mean, you've shared some of ours, where do they go? What can you give us a website?
I do have a website, but if you are on a mobile device, it will not show up, I'm sorry to say. We're working on it. I'm going to fix it.
Okay.
But my website is mollycorbett.com, and I spell my name with an I-E. So it's mollycorbett.com. But I post all of my most recent work either through Instagram or Facebook. So they can find me at either on Instagram, MCP Badass, or on Facebook, Molly Corbett Photography is the handle on Facebook. And last week I was at Libby Glass. I posted photos then. I was at a wedding before that. All of my most recent work is up. And I love to connect with people online.
All right. So those are a lot of pictures that you're taking.
Yes.
What photographs are you making? What are you working on now?
Well, that's the exhibit that I'm working on right now. I just got approval for January 14th for my upcoming show. I'm very proud to announce that ArtSpace will be hosting my next exhibit called Outlier. And Outlier will be in the cool space at ArtSpace, which is that top floor, that beautiful wood-floored space up there. And the Outlier exhibit is about sexual assault victims, Ross. It's a very intensely personal exhibit for me. It's a story I was born to tell. And I myself am a survivor and a victim of childhood sexual assault, and so are all the models that are in the show. They were carefully vetted to be in the show. And they're telling the most powerful story that that they have to tell, and that's a redemptive story from a time of great tragedy and trauma from their childhood. And I am just so excited to unleash that show on this town.
Well, that is the beauty of having a skilled artisan with a message and a medium and an opportunity. And when's that going to go up?
That's opening night will be January 14th. And I'm so grateful to the Shreveport Regional Arts Council for hosting.
Well, I'm proud of you for taking on the cause, because we all know that the picture's worth 1,000 words, then we can write a book with a walkthrough of the art space. So
absolutely,
I think that is just a wonderful thing to do.
Absolutely.
Well, we're quickly running out of time. I have not had an opportunity to thank Red River Radio, the staff.
Thanks so much.
So that everybody understands that this staff stays over and helps us with this.
Yeah.
We got Renee and Wally in one room answering phones. We got Kermit sitting here doing this. We get plenty of bang for our buck with the Red River Radio. And as a personal note, I'd like to thank them much. Molly, I really want to thank you for coming and
so much,
joining
Ross.
In with us.
Absolutely.
It's been fun. First time I sat down and talked to you, I knew that we would have a good time.
I knew it too.
we made a friend. So for all of you out in the radio land, thank you for tuning in. Remember, we'll be back. Save up your questions. You can send them to redriverradio.org or thebetterpicture.org. And remember, get close, stay focused, and keep shooting.